The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health with your host, Jennifer Tolo. Our discussion on the show today is based on real life, real situations, and most importantly, real people, just like you. Our goal is to help you live a healthier and happier life. Now, here is your host, Jen Tolo.
Good morning and welcome to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. I'm your host, Jen Tolo, RN, owner of Butterfly Family Wellness. I'm very excited to share with you my passion and my experience as a critical care nurse, as well as a mom and a health and healing intuitive coach. I'm very passionate about my integrative approach to medicine, and it's really my journey through being a nurse and being a mom that has led me here. So I wanted to bring in the topic today we'll be discussing is illness and death of a child and its impact on the health and well-being of siblings and the family unit. This is a really challenging and emotional topic, which I have had experience with, as well as my guests. I have two guests on the show today. Dr. Bernie Siegel, surgeon, life coach, inspirational author, and speaker. He says that he is on the board of directors of Heaven as a consultant, and he will be joining us after the break. But my first guest is my dear friend and wisdom coach, Pamela Garrett. She's an intuitive spiritual life coach who's also a mother and a grandmother. It is Pamela who's actually brought this topic to me and suggested this topic for the show. Welcome, Pamela.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So why did you feel like this was an important topic? I was so glad that you brought it up to me, but why did you feel like this would be a great topic for the show?
Well, when you're talking about spreading your wings and flying, it seems to me that we can't do wings and flight if we have something that keeps us tethered to the ground. And a lot of us, myself, of course, has a personal journey that got me to where I am today. And that was a long-term illness and then the death of my sister when I was 9. And then the personal experience I had as a mother with the death of 2 sons. And then from my wisdom coaching perspective, I hear many, many clients and stories about the death or the long-term illness of a sibling and what it did to the family, to the child, and as an adult, now they're parenting, and all of a sudden they're going, something has impacted me.
Right.
And so more and more, as you and I both know, with Facebook and everything else, every day there's something about a family that's lost children, the tragedies of mass losses of children.
Yeah.
And the thing I think about, Jen, for all of us is, how does that affect us as a family, as an individual, and as a community, as a village?
Absolutely.
And that's why, with your personal experience and my personal experience, I suspected there are many out there who have these dynamics they deal with.
Absolutely.
And I felt it was
I will.
Topic.
I completely agree with you. And I know that we have had, obviously, many discussions on the impact. I am fortunate to have never lost a child. And I empathize with you and any parent out there. There was just a death in my town. There was a child who shot himself, be it accidentally or intentionally, we're not sure, but shot himself just over the holiday weekend. And the impact that that's had on my oldest son, because he was friends with him, he was 16 years old, and then I see the impact it has on his sister, who's in 8th grade right now, and the family. It's just incredible. And as much as everybody's rallying around and as much as everybody's trying to say, what can I do, which I remember I had two sons that were ill. My second son, as you know, had a stroke at birth. And then my third son had leukemia when he was 2.5. And the impact that I am still seeing that that has on my son, who my oldest son, Larson, who is almost 15, as a matter of fact, just recently he had like a little lump on his throat. And he thought that, you know, he was really nervous about it. He was thinking it was something. So I said, you know, are you worried about this? And he said, yeah, I'm worried about this. So I said, okay. Even though I knew intuitively that it was not anything, he was automatically thinking he had cancer and that he was going to be ill or going to die. So we went to the doctor, and the doctor put him in a room and then was very apologetic. And I thought, what's the problem here? And he said, Mom, this is the room that Brody was diagnosed. So obviously the impact of an illness on my kids, I wasn't as aware of, but every day I see something else. So I'm very glad you brought this topic up.
Yes.
So how do you feel? I know that you have talked to me and you have said that you felt the death of one of your sons kind of led to the illness and death of your other son. Can you?
No question. Yes, my first son was, in legal language, murdered at the age of 25 in 1995. And my youngest son at the time was 14. And he had been out of town in a international baseball tournament, and he was in Puerto Rico. And my eldest son called him to tell him how excited he was to come home. And my youngest son said, I can't talk now. I've got to go. The team is getting ready to go to dinner. So that night, my son was killed. Oh. And he literally died on the street, although, as you know, they keep them alive.
Yes.
Until the whole family came, at which time we had to, his sister and stepbrother and stepsister and friends had to, we all made the decision when it was time. And of course, I ended up having to make the final decision, but everybody had to make the decision it was time to turn off the machines. Mm. Now the effects are starting to begin in what I call the insidious process of the death. And so when we picked up the youngest son the next day at the airport, his dad and I picked him up, the first question was, where's my brother? And we had to tell him at the airport his brother was dead. And that began what I describe as the years of insanity and the years of the screen behind the smiles. Because,
yes,
you know, we mothers and fathers have jobs, we have to keep the insurance, we have to, you know, do the daily things that keep a family going while inside dealing with the impact on ourselves as the parents while working with our children. Are kids safe? Are we giving them attention? And in our case, we had a combined family. And so the two girls, and then we had the elder son, and then Nicholas, who was the youngest. And Nick didn't want to talk. He couldn't talk, although we went into group therapy. We did different things to support the family. Mm-hmm. And one of the counselors said to us, Jen, and this turned out to be prophetic, if you don't get this out now in a healthy manner by grieving, by speaking your anger, your rage at what happened, it will come out crooked.
Mm-hmm.
It will come out with drugs. It will come out with acting out. It will come out with alcoholism. It will come out.
Somehow,
and
right?
Somehow. And,
yeah.
You know, depending on the style.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of this now goes into what kind of kids do we have? Do we have outgoing who can speak? Do we have the sensitive that's internal? And do we have a quiet one that says, I have to process? So we went into our groups, and my daughter made what I thought was a profound observation. Everyone has a different set of fingerprints. There are no two alike. We grieve and do our work per our fingerprints. And mm-hmm. I thought that was a great way
Absolutely.
To individualize each of our journeys.
Right. How old was she when she said that?
She was at that time, let's see, he was 25, so she would have been 28.
Wow.
So she was married, and the older kids were all gone. My son that was killed was in college.
Yeah.
So we only had the young one at home.
Yeah.
So moving forward, my parents were with us at the time of my son's death. We not only had the death, we had the legal system, which is another whole story, but I'd rather just stick with
right. Yes.
what was on here.
Absolutely.
So, so each child did it their own way. And the young one came home from school one day as a freshman and announced he was done with school. He wasn't going back. And you can imagine my,
right.
you know, I was already... right. insecure, feeling nuts and everything else. And now I've got this kid telling me he's not going to school. And I said, what's going on? What happened? And he said, I can't stand being the kid that others whisper about. There's that kid whose brother was murdered.
Yeah.
And he said, I can't do it, Mom. I can't do it. Well, he took himself away after a Bible camp experience and came, went down to Arizona. And I had to come and get him because he announced he wasn't coming back to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So ending a long story, he and I moved to Arizona in 1996, a year after the death of his brother. And his older brother came with us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had the blessing, Jen, of an extended family, a strong support system. All of that is wonderful on the external
right.
perception, as you just mentioned. But
right.
what's going on with the kid, the individual? How is this child impacted?
Absolutely.
And as time moved on, Nick got through high school. We all talked. We did grieving. We did different ways of being. And Nick would not talk. He couldn't talk. It was too big. It was too painful. Fortunately, he had his older brother and his older sisters who he could go to. And at that time, my stepson, the son of my heart, was there, and he deflected a lot. But then Nick got to a point in his life as a freshman in college, he couldn't do it anymore.
Mm.
And he left college, came home, and went through a real breakdown. And, you know,
yeah.
we always hope through the breakdown is the breakthrough. In this
right.
case, the breakdown came out. But what we didn't know is at this time, the residual health had affected. So in
right.
his college, playing football, he kept complaining about his right knee. And that became another long journey, which turned out to be diagnosed with cancer, a sarcoma. And, you know, on his death certificate, it says he died of cancer. But as his mom, I can tell you he died of a broken heart.
Yeah.
And he couldn't verbalize. He couldn't speak the pain
yeah.
and the anguish that was defined by his brother's death. And so it really brings to real life, Jen, how each family... each child, each parent has come in doing their journey the best they know how.
Absolutely.
And what it is for me and in my, you know, remaining in the place of hope and remaining active in wanting to do the healing, I reached out to books like Bernie Siegel's. I reached
yeah.
out to other death and dying experts. And here we are today.
Absolutely. And Bernie's going to join us right after the break. But one
right.
of the things that Bernie says is that an illness affects a person's life beyond just the physical dimension. And it's so true. And he was saying that one of the fundamental problems, I was reading his book again, was the inability, people's inability to love themselves, having been mm-hmm. unloved by others during some crucial part of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's one thing that you brought up with my son is in the journey when you're going through illness or death of a child, you're so focused on that child in sort of survival mode. And as much as you're trying to take care of their needs, your other child's needs, as well as your ill child's needs. You definitely sort of are doing the best you can. And I find kids, like I see this in this daughter, the sister of the child who just died in my town. And I saw this with my own son, that they are kind of making sure it's okay for us, and they don't want to burden us, and they want to make it okay for us. And that takes a toll on them. And as much as we don't consciously want them to feel unimportant or unloved, it's the message that they get sometimes is that I'm not important. And I know a lot of times, like, people would ask, oh, how's Brody doing? How's Brody doing? And I wanted to say sometimes, I have three other children, you know, like, ask about them, you know, ask about, you know, the effects that this is having on them. Take care of my other kids as well, you know. They're important, and I feel like that's so essential, is for kids to know, surviving kids, as sad as that is, need to know that they are important as well.
Yes, I absolutely agree, Jen. And what's interesting is many of us believe we're giving those messages, how important they are. And I just recently had a client who's in his late 40s say that when his sibling died at four, the message to him was, now you're the big guy, you're the man of the family. Don't upset mama. And so he heard all of the messages that I'm sure his parents and family thought were positive. But what he heard was, I have to be important. I can't feel what I'm feeling. Someone else needs more help than I can wait until later. So it's that perception of the messages we give.
Yes.
And again, we can give the best ones we can. And then, you know, support as we're doing the processing that goes on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, after the break,
what about me?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. What about me? And I hope to touch on that with Bernie when we get back, because I know Bernie is, for anybody who's listening who is not familiar with Bernie Siegel, Bernie was a surgeon at Yale Medical Center, which is, he was a pediatric surgeon, but he retired in 1989 to work solely with the caregivers and patients, because he was seeing the impact that death and illness was having on people. And he started the Exceptional Cancer Patients in 1978, which is an individual and group therapy group. And he utilizes drawings and dreams and images. And really, he calls it carefrontation, which is a safe and loving confrontational approach with facilitating personal lifestyle changes, empowerment, and healing. So he's written 13 books. As you've said, it was, you read the book, you really were touched by that book.
Right.
I feel like all physicians, everybody who's working with patients, caring for patients, really should read these books, because he truly has immense spiritual insight into the process. And so I look forward to talking to Bernie at the break. Thank you again, Pamela, and please stay tuned. I'm sure you have some questions for him as well. So stay tuned, everyone, and we will be joined with Bernie Siegel after this break.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Spread your wings and fly into health with Butterfly Family Wellness. We offer customized healthy living plans for adults, children, schools, and communities. This includes various levels of personal coaching, holistic health counseling, cooking classes, workshops, Reiki healings, and attunements. Call 978-290-1938 or visit butterflyfamilywellness.com to take a personalized approach to family health and well-being and take control of your health. Visit butterflyfamilywellness.com or call 978-290-1938 today.
If you have cancer, there are a lot of questions that need to be answered. While many medical professionals can give us some of the answers, there are many more unanswered questions that can't always be answered to our satisfaction. Listen for Cancer Concepts and Compliments with Dr. James Belanger. We'll discuss the tests, the compromised immune system, how cancer grows, and what natural medicines could be added to conventional therapies that may help keep it at bay. Cancer Concepts and Compliments airs live every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
You are listening to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. To reach Jennifer Tolo or her guest expert today, please call into our show at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Now, let's get back to the program.
Hello, good morning, and welcome back to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. I'm Jen Tolo, your host, RN and owner of Butterfly Family Wellness, butterflyfamilywellness.com. And I'm very, very excited to have Dr. Bernie Siegel on the show, as well as my dear friend and life coach, Pamela Garrett. We are discussing illness and death of a child and how that impacts a family, particularly the siblings, and how that can impact their health and their well-being. Very difficult topic, but one that I feel is really important, as many of us have known somebody or have been personally touched by this topic. Bernie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I can write another book based on what the two of you have already said. But, you know, I was just thinking that, you know, you can also join a group, compassionate friends, you know, parents of children who have died.
Yes.
And the thing I also know is what dies is the body. The consciousness does not.
Absolutely.
So you can get signs from your children, too, who have died
yes.
to help you. And when I say that, to make a short story, a young man, a teenager who died, excuse me.
Bless you.
Bless you.
And the sneeze. But he was studying butterflies. And the father was out walking in Connecticut and saw this beautiful butterfly who followed him. And I've had this kind of experience. Had a butterfly stay with us for a day and a half.
Yes, I have as
anyway,
well.
When he got home and moved it up,
a yellow butterfly.
In his son's information, it was a South American butterfly flying in Connecticut.
Wow.
And he knew the message. And now, let me start from our family. We have five children. When one of them was seven, he had a pain in his knee. I said, take a hot bath. No, I need an x-ray. And that's something else to always listen to.
Yes.
That intuitive wisdom.
Yes.
And sure enough, he had a bone tumor. And I felt very guilty for having told him to take a bath instead of getting an x-ray. And I was sure he'll be dead in a year of a sarcoma. Before I go on, we'll say that he ended up having an extremely rare, very painful type of benign tumor. But before we knew that, in other words, before he had surgery, he came to me the day after I had come home and told all our kids and my wife about the x-ray and what was going to happen, you know, that he'll probably lose his leg, be dead in a year. I mean, I didn't put it in those terms, but to let them know that was likely what the future would hold. And a seven-year-old comes into me the next day and says, Dad, can I talk to you for a minute? I said, sure, what is it? You're handling this poorly. 7 years old.
Wow.
I said, what do you mean? He said, look, we want to go out and play in the yard. You prefer us depressed in our bedroom thinking about the future. We're trying to have a nice day. And boy, did he, you know, he was a very good therapist and helped me. And the other thing I've learned is to always ask yourself, And believe me, I live my sermon. I'm not telling people what to do if I don't do it. But when you're going through hell, I mean, that's the way Joseph Campbell put it. He said, if you're going through hell, stop and say, what am I to learn from this experience? So when I don't like how I'm behaving, how I'm feeling, I stop and I say, what am I to learn? The way I put it then is the curse becomes a blessing.
Yes.
As some people said, their disaster was a wake-up call, a new beginning. They turned it into something because, again, it redirected them and helped them to survive. And we have to remember,
absolutely,
part of what you talked about, Alice Miller said it beautifully. I won't give you her whole quote, but the psychologist, our childhood is stored up in our bodies. And at the end, she said, and someday the body will present its bill, for it is as incorruptible as a child who, while still whole in spirit, will not stop tormenting us, you know, until we stop evading the truth. And what you were saying is very true. You can't separate mind and body. Matter of fact, I used to be blamed by doctors for asking my patients what's happened in your life. Mm-hmm. And they'd say, why are you blaming your patients? I said, I'm not blaming them. I'm trying to find out what could make them vulnerable. And see, today we have studies that show loneliness affects the genes that control immune function.
Absolutely.
So you lose a loved one, yes, you're more likely to get sick.
Yeah.
You know, or you retire.
Right.
All these things affect us.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes,
you know, as you're mentioning also, that you have to grow up feeling loved.
Mm-hmm.
Or you become an addict. You become self-destructive. I mean, one study of Harvard students revealed that if while attending college they said, I was loved, by middle age, about a quarter, 25% had a serious life-threatening type illness, major illness. Those who said my parents didn't love me, 98% had.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids need that, you know, that love to feel good about themselves and take care of themselves versus, oh, I've had a tragedy, I've had this happen, it's okay if I, you know, do all these things.
Right.
And also to remember, to give you another statement from one of our kids, Dad, are you getting a divorce? I said, what are you talking about? I was reading the newspaper in the living room. I said, what are you talking about? You yell a lot.
Mm.
I said, look, if I don't like how I'm being treated, I speak up. I make noise.
My kids say that to me all the time.
I love you and I love your mother, you know?
Right.
So they learned that anger and love could go together.
Right.
Yes.
And that's important in families. Oh, and because he finished the conversation saying, oh, okay, because the neighbors were always yelling at each other and they're getting divorced. That was his friend's parents.
But, well, I will say, going through illness or even the death of a child really taxes a relationship.
Right.
And I can't tell you how many couples we would see.
Yes.
My son was treated at the Jimmy Fund at Dana-Farber, and I can't tell you how many people I would see that you find out that their marriage broke up or, you know, and you can see how that happened. I remember my husband and I getting kind of snippy with each other, and he said, honey, we're in this together and we have each other. It's only each other that understand what we're going through, and we need to be strong together.
Right.
And it's true.
And it's
absolutely
much harder for men to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know men, I'm talking about, you know, husbands and fathers who are sitting with their wife and children in my office and said, there's no point in living. I can't work anymore.
Yeah.
And the women are saying, I can't die till they're all married and out of the house.
Right.
But we all need to to not live a role, not be the wage earner or mama, to really have your own authentic life. So it doesn't end if the kids leave home.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, one of our children, our daughter, her son was born with a genetic problem that almost 100% of the kids die of because they can't metabolize fat to turn it into energy.
Yeah.
See?
Yes, I've heard that. Is that a mito? Yeah.
And he's alive and a teenager today because of what she did caring for him. Because these kids, basically, it's like they go into a coma and they're newborn. They can't say what's wrong. And nobody knows what they need is, you know, sugar put in and intravenous food.
Right.
But anyway, she's divorced. And I know a big part of it is what she went through, you know, caring for him and what that can do to a marriage. But I think we have to speak up. We have to express feelings. We have to see aggression. My psychiatrist friend, Carl Menninger, years ago said, you know, aggression is a healthy thing. I said, what are you talking about? Because you mentioned earlier that one of your children is a football player.
Yeah.
See, that's healthy. Get out there on the field and knock heads. Then you don't come home and take it out on everybody. I mean, hammer nails. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can build something.
Yeah.
Cut down a tree.
My son says that all the time. He says that playing football and lacrosse, which are both very physical sports, really help him because he gets out his anger and his frustration.
Right. And we all have to understand that. tell you my sense of humor, because when you mentioned husband surgeon, you see, Menninger was saying, Bernie, you have to, and I used to say this too, you have to understand why people become physicians. I'd say there, just as we read about all the police killing people, there are unhealthy reasons for being a surgeon. There are unhealthy reasons for becoming a police officer or anything else. So mm-hmm. people say, why did you go into surgery? I said, I like cutting people up, but I don't want to end up in jail. So now I get paid for it. And they look at me like, oh, boy, that's the end of that conversation. But, yeah. But you know, it's to understand and know yourself. Then you're healthier.
Yes.
Because the other is, especially with children, who get, you know, you have five kids, who gets the most attention? Right. The one driving you nuts.
Exactly.
I mean, that one I mentioned at age seven, you know, who had the tumor, he came to me one day and said, you don't love me as much as my brothers and sister. I said, what are you talking about? He said, you have five children, we should each get 20% of your time. I said, excuse me. Your brother is driving us insane, so he gets 40. But I really was proud of him.
Yeah.
You see, he is a sweet kid. You don't have to worry about. He's in the last bedroom at the end of the hall. So yeah. What would he interpret it as? They don't love me. Look where they put me.
Right.
No, we love you and trust you, so that's why we let you be at the end of the hall where your brother is next to the kitchen. So if the door shuts, we can look in and know what he's
exactly.
doing, you know?
Yeah, we all have one of those. My youngest is, well, we call him the glue. I was actually pregnant with my youngest when my third son had leukemia. And he is amazing because he definitely starts squeaking and starts letting me know when he's not getting his fair share of attention. Yeah. And he definitely lets me know. Whereas my oldest will kind of go within and gets angry and it comes out sort of as resentment and anger, and then I realize, you know what? He's not feeling heard. He's not feeling important right now.
Right. And you mentioned the words life coach earlier.
Yes.
Two words that I try to always share with people. One is life coach. You know, just as your son's a football player, if the coach comes up to him and tells him something, he doesn't say, oh, that's awful. I'm a terrible. He's listening to the coach make him a better player.
Right.
And so for people to understand that criticism, I mean, this is a quote from a woman who said, my mother's words were eating away at me and gave me cancer. That's not a coach. See, you're a failure. You embarrass me. I'm dressing you in dark clothes and nobody will notice you. That's what her mother did. Oh. But when they come up and say there's a better way of doing this, that's a coach.
Yes.
So look for life coaches. They're criticizing you for your benefit. And the other word I use is love warrior. Because I remember reading an article
Like that, Pamela.
They divided it into two things, you know, that you can be a lover or you can be a warrior. And as I was reading it, I thought, hey, you can be a love warrior. That what you use as your weapon is love.
Yes.
You know, when the kids are driving you crazy, I love you.
Yeah.
What do you mean? And they don't know what to do.
Right.
You know, because you're not screaming and yelling and fighting with them. It's, I love you.
And it's so funny. Pamela said that to me. Pamela had said that to me when I was struggling. My oldest, he'd get angry and he would just be a little venomous towards me. And Pamela said, he just loves you so much that he's uncomfortable with it. So every time he would start with me or harping on me, I'd say, I know you love me and I love you so much. And it would just infuriate him. But I feel like that's what I needed. I need to, exactly like you said, give love and grace.
And Bernie, this is Pamela
I've seen
speaking, but you know, for those of us parents that go through as I went through the sarcoma, the 4 years with my son before his transition, I had to become a love warrior with the medical world to make sure he got the treatment. And that's not always looked upon to be a love warrior. And so inside us, we have to believe what we're doing as a love warrior, as you call it, is okay, and to give ourselves permission.
Yes,
and when you persist.
A lot of people don't want that information or someone questioning their authority.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes important for we parents to know it's okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. what I have found is in abusive alcoholic parents, because people have to understand the opposite of love is not hate and fear. It's indifference, rejection, and abuse. And I tell people to keep it up, because a lot of times from the children I hear, They're not responding. They're not doing anything. I'm saying I love you. And in this one case, I got the call. Say, what is it? I was late. I ran out of the house this morning. My parents are in the street screaming, you forgot something. I said, what did I forget? I have all my stuff. No, you didn't say I love you this morning. Oh. Now, that was 3 months of the parents not responding. You know,
yes.
She'd say, I love you, and go out of the house in the morning. And then she ran out without saying it. And that's what I tell people now. Tell the people in your life you love them for 3 months and then skip a day. And then you'll get an email or a phone call saying, are you okay? What happened? I didn't even
know
today.
Really?
Yeah. And let me add this, because this was the greatest gift of all, I think. I call it winning the lottery of life, because the boy who probably was the most trouble in terms of bringing him up, and why the one said I don't get, you know, 20% of your time. I mean, they're all adults now, but I got an email, my wife and I did, from him the other day, saying, I want to tell you this, I love you, and I thank you for all the things you did for me as a child. You know, from going to school and talking to the kids about, you know, as a doctor and all kinds of things we did. And he said, in case something happened to me, I, you know, where I then couldn't tell you, I wanted to tell you this now.
Wow.
And boy, I mean, I've shared that with so many people, just, and not for me, if you know what I mean, but to understand that that's what life is about.
Mm-hmm.
If you can hear that from one of your children 40 years later, after all the trouble, it makes it all worthwhile. And we're learning too. They know that. I mean, our oldest said to me, how come they don't have to do what I have to do? I said, I learned that what I asked you to do wasn't important. You know, because by the time you have the fifth kid, even things you were mentioning, I'm going, you know, I'm not going to school, where I'm going to school. I mean, it was like, okay, go ahead. You know, by the time it's the fourth or fifth, I'm not worrying about them being a doctor, lawyer, you know, that kind of thing.
You've gained perspective through your children. Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, I mean, it's hard for me to stop talking, but let me share this, because my parents, I think, were good teachers. I call it mottos to live by, not mottos to die by, as some people hear. But do what will make you happy. When troubles occur, God is redirecting you. Something good will come of this. And my father's father died when he was 12, and I heard him say one day, which blew my mind, that was one of the best things ever happened to me. I said to him when we were alone, what are you talking about? He said, what it taught me about life was what I was grateful for. And for him, life was about helping other people. You know what I mean? Not having a bigger house and a fancy car. And it was, you helped others. So do what will make you happy. Troubles are God's redirections. And that we're here to make the world a better place for everyone.
Yes.
Absolutely. We're about to take a
life.
Oh, absolutely. We're about to take a short break. And I invite everybody to check out Dr. Siegel, Bernie Siegel, MD.com, his website, and Pamela Garrett's website, GarrettWisdomCoaching.com, and my own website, www.butterflyfamilywellness.com, and connect with us, see what we're doing. I know that Bernie has about 13 books. Is that right, Bernie?
Yeah, something like that.
Written that you can check out. They're all extremely inspirational. And when we get back, I would love to just talk more about this emotional topic with both Pamela and Bernie. And then Bernie has a terrific poem that I would love for him to read before we leave called Magic Openings. I use it in a lot of my coaching and a lot of my workshops that I do. So I love this poem, and I would love for you to read it when we're ending the show. So check out our websites and come back with us to hear more from Bernie and Pamela, and we'll be right back.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Spread your wings and fly into health with Butterfly Family Wellness. We offer customized healthy living plans for adults, children, schools, and communities. This includes various levels of personal coaching, holistic health counseling, cooking classes, workshops, Reiki healings, and attunements.
Call 978-290-1938 or visit ButterflyFamilyWellness.com to take a personalized approach to family health and well-being and take control of your health. Visit ButterflyFamilyWellness.com or call 978-290-1938 today.
How many times have you heard this?
I'm sick and tired of feeling sick and tired.
You are what you eat.
I've tried every diet.
Diets don't work.
It's time to stop this kind of madness and start thinking and feeling empowered to change your health. Tune in to The Raw Truth with Chef Sharon Fraser. Join us weekly for thought-provoking conversations with world-renowned experts in the food, medical, holistic, sports medicine, chiropractic, and naturopathic health sciences. The Raw Truth airs live every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. To reach Jennifer Tolo or her guest expert today, please call into our show at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Now, let's get back to the program.
Hi, and welcome back to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. I am joined by Dr. Bernie Siegel and Pamela Garrett, and we were discussing illness of a child or death of a child and how it impacts people, right. Namely siblings and family members. And on the during the break, Pamela and Bernie and I were talking about sort of how our personal experiences and how we have grown from that. And I love Dr. Siegel or Bernie. Sorry, I know you like to be called Bernie. Bernie had said that he doesn't like the word victim and that you should all refuse to be a victim. And I definitely feel that a lot of these experiences can either turn you to kind of opening your mind and growing, which I hope, I mean, there are times I think all of us become victims, but I think overall, I know I have really grown an immense amount from my journeys with my children. And I know my husband, who is a surgeon, has completely grown. I felt like Oliver having the stroke, that was sort of a stepping stone in his Eric, my husband's first introduction to being on the other side of healthcare. And then when our other son had leukemia, he really was just, his world was rocked. And he really has grown immensely as a father, as a person, but also as a surgeon. So
all of us, I started keeping a journal and writing poems. Had nothing to do with rhyming. It was getting my feelings out.
Yes.
And I'd say to everybody, keep a journal, write poems. Don't keep those feelings stored up inside of you. And my wife taught me something, because I was hiding my journal. Because what would I write about? All the horrible things that happened all day.
Right.
You know, kids dying. I mean, I couldn't imagine why God would make a world and give a kid cancer. I've learned a perfect world is not creation. I mean, I've learned from God. I talked to God. That a perfect world is not creation. We're all here to live and learn. But it's, again, one day she said to me, Bernie, I said, what is it, honey? Your journal. It's awful. I mean, it's so depressing. There's nothing funny in it. I said, my life isn't funny. What are you talking about? And then she told me jokes that I had told them at the dinner table when I got home from the hospital. Now, those were the crazy things that would happen, you know, in the hospital. It's like walking into the wrong room and there's a naked lady and she starts screaming because she doesn't know who I am. I'm not her doctor and I'm in street clothes. You know, funny, I mean, nuts and things that would happen in the hospital.
Yes.
But I never remembered them. And she taught me something.
Yes.
Don't forget the nice things that happen, the funny
Absolutely.
Things that happen. And
I kept a journal myself all during both my sons, and I too have had some spiritual visits, and I work with angels, and the angels call themselves Mother's Love, and I've been writing a lot of little anecdotes, and a lot of the things are funny because I remember going through this I needed my sense of humor. I needed people to laugh with me. I needed people to have hope with me instead of the gloom and doom. And that really is what powered me and what really fed me during that time. But I kept a journal, and I'm in the process of writing a book about all of this.
Yeah,
and the wisdom I gained, called Mother's Love.
Yeah. Part of why I write is to get it out of me. And if it helps other people, wonderful. And let me add, because you've all talked about butterflies, that I love the and angels. That you meet angels. See, I'm on the board of directors of heaven, so
yes.
I'm up there all the time. And there are angels with one wing. And when I said, what are you doing with one wing? Well, watch. And they embrace each other and then fly.
Mm.
And that's what we have to remember, how we can help each other by embracing. And one more that happened to me, visiting a friend at hospice. As I was leaving one day, he said, goodbye, Journey. And that really hit home for me. You know, that he knows my name, his Bernie, but he started calling me Journey. And I think we all need to accept the fact that we're all on a journey. And angels, the symbolism, the meaning is that they're messengers. And we're all on a journey. Life is a school. We're all here to learn and keep moving up in the grades. And another thing that occurred to me, I love asking kids at school, what do you call graduation? Now, you're finishing school. Why do they call it a commencement? Why don't we call it your termination? And I think we have to realize that life is about beginnings.
Right.
Yeah, we have losses. We have changes. And how rarely people actually use the word dead or death or died. In the hospital, you almost never hear it. You know, they pass, we're lost, we're gone. And we need to get comfortable and understand it's going to happen. I mean, that it's okay. You're not a failure, you know, if you die. You didn't do it wrong, kind of thing. And to be able to be comfortable and talk about it. I mean, our house was a zoo. I won't go into all the details, but, our yard was fenced in. We were rescuing pets. Veterinarians gave us all these exotic creatures that people didn't want. And I may add, we broke a lot of zoning laws but never got reported because people knew we were not neurotic. We were doing it as a reverence for life, that we cared about these things. But I found that the kids would keep coming to me, Dad, you know, the turtle's sick, or the bird, or the fish, or the goat. And they always wanted me to cure everything. And I had to sit them down and say, look, these animals die. I can't save everybody's life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I say that, I've done cesarean sections on guinea pigs, you know. So trying to save them when they couldn't deliver. But, you know, the kids began to understand that death is a part of life.
Yes.
And yes, it's appropriate. You know, it's okay to be sad when you've lost a loved one. But
absolutely.
I may add, I wrote a book called Buddy's Candle.
Yes.
You know, because that story helped me most of all. And it's about a boy and his dog who developed cancer. And the dog, of course, is the boy's teacher. But the essence of it, why do you call it Buddy's Candle? See, when my father died, I was having a tough time dealing with the grief and using my mortality in a healthy way, if you know what I mean. Accepting I'm going to die, but how can I? And I was really struggling. And then the angel showed up, said, Bernie, come on. I said, what? We're going up to heaven. The week after, at the end of the week, you know, after everybody who died that week, we have a parade in heaven for them. And they're all dressed in beautiful robes, carrying a gorgeous candle that lights up their face. So come on up. I want you to see what's happening, and you're dead. So we go up to heaven, and I'm watching the parade. And I said to the angel, there's a man coming with a dark candle. It's not lit. And the angel said, oh, here, take this match and go light it. And I ran up, and, of course, it was my father. And I never forget saying to him, Dad, your candle's out. I'm going to light it for you. And he said, Bernie, they do, but your tears keep putting it out.
Oh.
And boy.
It's beautiful.
From then on, you know, I don't want to make my dad unhappy. So I have his picture, my mother's picture, literally a portrait I painted of them hanging in our front hall. So when I walk down the hall, there they are looking at me. And what do I do? I smile.
Right.
Oh, and I got to tell you one more mystical story because this blew my mind. A woman miscarried, and the doctor who was in the hospital didn't know her, but he thought he might because her last name was the same as his. You know, it's like my walking down the hall and I see the name Siegel on the wall, so I go in. But they were not related at all, but he didn't leave her. He sat there and helped her deal with the loss of his baby. And he said, a couple of years later, I got a note from her. She said, I'm in China, and I was having trouble just thinking about having another child, trying. And I saw a plaque on the wall in this garden, and I asked them to interpret it for me. And it said, enjoy yourself. It's later than you think. So I decided I'm going to have another child. And I also thought of you, and I wanted you to know that message and hope that this will help you. Mm. And he went home and literally took time off from his office just to enjoy himself. And my mother dies. We're cleaning her house, which she's lived in for decades. What happens when I walk into the den? Hanging on the wall, which I have never seen in all the years I've been in that house visiting her, a Chinese plaque at the bottom in English, enjoy yourself, it's later than you think.
Wow.
Now, I cannot believe that that was hanging there for 30 years and I never noticed it. And so that's hanging beneath my parents' portrait. And I'm getting therapy every day, multiple times a day. You know, put your pictures up of your loved ones.
Yeah.
And let them be there to help you.
Absolutely. What would you think to say to them as far as some of the most important things that you would want somebody to know that's either going through illness or dealing with the death of a loved one?
Well, when going through illness, I have found, I use the word potential, that we're not statistics. I mean, I know people who had a 5% chance of surviving who are alive and well today.
Mm-hmm.
And what I tell people is to look at your life and try to create a life you can love and love your body. Don't get mad at your body. You know, look what you did to me. You gave me cancer. But love your body, love your life. Then your body does all it can to keep you alive. I mean, Monday morning, we have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. It's a simple example of what I'm talking about. So, again, like that theme, enjoy yourself. Know that you're here for a limited time. Don't give your power away so that other people don't make you miserable. You're in charge of what you think and feel.
Right.
And, you know, and to live your authentic life. Don't let people impose a life on you so that, in a sense, you're then losing your life, you know, making everybody else happy with what profession you go, you know, or what school you go to or anything else, that you let the person live in their heart. And these are age-old messages.
Mm-hmm.
I always think of Jesus saying, if you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. If you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you.
Yes.
So, you know, we're all talking about the same thing. So look for common themes from the wise sages of the last few thousand years, and you'll notice they are saying the same thing in different ways. So when you find that common theme, say, hey, this must work.
Absolutely. You know? And I will say, too, always maintain yourself a sense of humor, and find laughter and love everywhere you look.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because when I was talking about loneliness, the other side of the coin, you tell cancer patients, laugh for no apparent reason every few hours. They lived longer than the control group that only laughed if something funny came up.
Absolutely.
So again, you have to realize when we started this conversation about mind and body, that if you give actors a comedy to perform, just read the script, their immune function goes up, their stress hormone levels go down. Give them a tragedy, the opposite happens. So it's not about blaming yourself. It's about your feelings being a part of your body chemistry. But you see, if you're not brought up with love, that's what I found also. It's the guilt, shame, and blame.
Yes.
Bernie said, you know, I'm not going to read his book because if I don't get well, then I didn't love enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, it's not that. It's your potential. You know,
yes.
Like the football game. You may
right.
not win every game. This is from a Colgate University football player, because I went there, that I got to know when he had leukemia. He said, when I was playing in college, I used to think I gave everything I had on every play. But now that I'm not playing and dealing with the leukemia, I know that I didn't. This was a talk he gave to the team at halftime.
Amazing.
So don't leave anything in here in the locker room. Leave it all out there on the field.
So
and they went out and upset Army.
Yes.
But, you know, he had learned from his disease. Yeah.
Unfortunately, we have to close out, but I would very much love for you to read this, your poem, The Magic Openings. If you would, I must thank both of you for being on my show, and I will list this poem on my website, www.butterflyfamilywellness.com. But would you please honor us with reading this poem and close us out, Bernie?
Happy to. I'd say that, and before it, I have these in my computer, that imitate water. It dissolves the hard. It can shift from gas, liquid to vapid. You know, you have choices to change. So whenever you need a role model, either use Lassie or water. This is called Magic Openings. Today, my life unfolds. As this paper unfolds, so does my life. I will have faith and not judge events. Our Creator often unfolds things in ways I do not understand. I will learn from the new set of directions. Today, I will be a lover. I will look in the mirror and love who I see. I will act as if I am the person I want to become. I will see all living things through the eyes of love. I will judge no one. Today, I will forgive. I will forgive myself. I will forgive all those in my life I need to forgive. I am free of the past. I receive the benefits of forgiveness. Today, I am not afraid of the dark. I do not need to see where I am going. I need to feel my way. I accept that all new life begins in the dark. I will labor to grow and find the light. I have the wisdom of a seed within me. Today I will use my lifetime wisely. I will say no to what is not creative. I will say yes to my way of loving the world. I will accept that today is the best day of my lifetime. I will be a co-creator today and have no sense of time. I will rest when I am tired. Today I will make my own weather. I will dispel the clouds of fear and bring sunshine into my life. I am cleansed and softened by the showers. I will light the moon and stars and make my darkness bright. I will marvel in the miracle of the weather and seasons of my life. Today, I am the master gardener. I will turn death and loss into compost with which to fertilize my life and soul. I will enjoy the diversity of my garden. I will seek the beauty in all living and growing things. I will let a child know who she or he is loved today. Today, I am not I was. Today, I am not I will be. Today, I am.
Thank you so much.
And so
thank you,
because
I forget some of the things I've read, and I keep going back and learning. And I would say that to everybody. If you find a book that you think is very helpful, read it again a year or two from now. If the book gets better, it's a good sign that you're growing and changing. If the book is no better, then you're stuck.
Thank you again for joining us this week for Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. Jennifer Tolo invites you to listen again next Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time for another edition on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a healthy week.